Hello, and welcome to The Score, Overture London's regular series of interviews with the leading thinkers and practitioners in the legal industry. I'm Jamie White.
And I'm Paul Martinstein.
Today we are joined by Leanne Craig, who is the head of commercial disputes at Housefeld. Having trained at Clifford Chance, Leanne joined Housefeld back in 2010. She is currently the Legal 500 Commercial Disputes Lawyer of the Year and in the Lawyers Hot 100. Today we find out about her fascinating journey and career today.
Leanne, welcome to the podcast. It's always good to welcome the current Legal 500 Commercial Disputes Lawyer of the Year. That's always a good accolade. Our first question is really to find out what your journey into law has been, to find out how you got into this.
I wanted to be a lawyer from quite a young age. I used to love watching programmes like LA Law, and I really wanted to be a criminal defence lawyer. And that was my plan when I was applying to university, and that was why I decided to stay in Scotland, because my plan had been to become an advocate, as barristers are called up there. And I was very set on that from quite a young age. I suppose as I got older and got to know myself and the way that I felt about things and thought, and coupled with my experience of doing an Erasmus year in Brussels, which was quite a life-changing year for me in many ways, it slowly began to dawn on me that whilst I loved studying criminal law and I loved criminology and all of the kind of psychology behind criminality and so on, that I felt I would struggle with representing somebody whose story I didn't believe. And similarly, I think I would have struggled being on the prosecution side. But that kind of dawning coincided somewhat with my year in Brussels, which really opened up a new world for me in terms of the people that I was exposed to. I was studying in French all of that year. I made lots of Spanish friends. And at the end of that year, I decided to go and work in Spain for a bit and learn Spanish. And so really, by the time I came back to Scotland after that year, I had decided that I wanted to go and work down in London for one of the big international law firms. And that was kind of how things started.
And that's brilliant. So, Leanne, that sort of brings us up to date. Tell us about your practice now and sort of what's been keeping you busy. Because I understand from conversations that we've had that you've been doing some international work, and in particular in Spain. So if you can tell our listeners what's been going on, that'd be wonderful.
Sure. Well, I'm very lucky in that I have a very varied practice, which I suppose has grown with me over the years. And sometimes people say I have my finger in too many pies, but I think it's just a function of me being enthusiastic about lots of things. So I head the commercial disputes team at Housefeld, and so that team has been growing, and we're doing a lot of really interesting disputes work across a whole range of areas and sectors. I'm also quite heavily involved in what we're doing in terms of the environmental and climate change work that the firm is increasingly known for. But on the Spain front, as I had just said, I spent some time working in Spain as an au pair to learn Spanish, which was interesting. And then when I finished my degree, I went back out to Spain, and I spent a year whilst I did effectively the GDL. I had to do part of it because I'd studied Scottish law and I was going to be working at Clifford Chance. So I had to do property and equity, which I did by correspondence whilst I worked in Madrid as an English and French teacher. And so from that time, I've always been very close to Spain. It feels like a second home for me in many ways. I have many friends there, and I've always visited. And over the last few years, I've really had the opportunity to develop a practice in Spain and with Spanish clients, which has been incredibly exciting. As lots of listeners will know, Housefeld is known for the work that we do in the competition litigation sphere, and that although I do not do competition litigation day in, day out these days. I did in the very early years when I joined Housefeld, and there were not very many of us in the practice at that point. It's something that I'm interested in, and with the changes in the law over recent years and the introduction of the damages directive in Spain, I thought that the market there was becoming increasingly interesting for a firm like Housefeld to go and look to litigate and to act for Spanish clients. So I'm doing quite a lot in Spain in the competition sphere, but increasingly because pre-pandemic, I was going to Spain a lot. I act for increasing numbers of Spanish clients in English High Court litigation. And we have Spanish qualified lawyers in our team. We have quite a number of Spanish speakers in our team. So that's something that we like doing. And I can't wait to get back out there. It's been growing and it's been busy, notwithstanding the fact that I've not been able to actually get to Madrid for the past 15 months. But I'm hoping to get back out there in a couple of months' time.
Are you criticising the UK weather? Is that what you're doing, Leanne?
No, not at all. I find the weather in Madrid quite challenging. They say in the saying about Madrid is 6 months of 9 months of winter, 3 months of hell. It's very, very hot in the summer, and it's actually not that warm in the winter at all. Barcelona's got a nicer climate.
Absolutely.
Weather notwithstanding, it is worth us touching on the pandemic, and clearly it's affected the way you work. But it'd be really interesting to get your thoughts on how you think it's affected the legal industry more broadly. What we found is it seems to have been a great accelerator for change, and a lot of it positive. But it'd be good to get your take on things.
Sure. I mean, I think the pandemic has brought a lot of challenges with it, but also a lot of opportunity, for change to take place, and at quite a fast pace, much faster than it would have taken place otherwise. I think, as we all know, lots of firms are now looking at working arrangements. I think there is very evidently a desire amongst lawyers, particularly more junior lawyers, to be able to work more flexibly. And that's something that doesn't surprise me. I've had a kind of post-pandemic type working arrangement ever since I had my children. And so I very much know the benefits of coming into the office 3 days a week and working from home too. I think it's a really good way to work. So I think that will help many ways, I think, with retention in the profession, where junior lawyers, I think, are more confident about asking for what they want. I think they seem to be clearer about what they want in many ways than junior lawyers were when I was one of those way back when. I think it's been interesting, even at the senior end, seeing some people realise, in fact, the opportunity that working more flexibly brings them in many senses, including spending more time with their families. So I think that's important. I think the big nut that we'll have to crack over the coming months will be, how do we manage this more kind of hybrid type working arrangement? Because that's where I see some challenges cropping up, because we're going to have on any given day some of the team working from home, some of the team working from the office, some of the team working from goodness knows where. And I think it will require some greater advances to be made in relation to the technology that we're using. I don't think it necessarily works having, you know, half the team in a meeting room on Teams on a kind of rubbish connection where the people at home can't see facial expressions, they can't really read the room. And having, in between the lockdowns, been on both ends of the screen, I suppose, having been in the office in meetings where people were dialing in from home and feeling, well, this is a waste of being in a meeting with people in real life because we're all staring at the screen. I've also been the person on the screen with everyone else in the room and feeling ignored and that nobody's looking at me and it's really hard to get a word in edgeways. And I also think there's been a real leeching of, you know, the boundaries, I suppose, between the office and home. And I think that's something that a lot of people, myself included, have struggled with. I think, you know, one of the flip sides of allowing people to work effectively when it suits them is that, you know, emails are coming in constantly. They're coming in through the weekend. They're coming in late at night. I'm at a level of seniority where I feel able to turn off and ignore those emails. There are lots of junior lawyers who struggle with that. There are lots of senior lawyers who struggle with that. And I do think we will need to be very much alive to issues of burnout and to be very clear in terms of communicating about what is acceptable, what is expected. And so I think that's quite a big thing. I mean, obviously, there are all the other shifts that have been taking place and that I think are here to stay, you know, like remote hearings and so on. And I think those developments are pretty positive in many respects. Certainly the remote hearings that I've attended have worked very, very well. So lots of shifts. And I suppose the other shift that I would see in terms of the, you know, the legal profession generally is that I suspect there will be more boutique practices opening up as lawyers who have been in bigger firms and have seen how they've been able to continue their practices without necessarily the infrastructure and the setup that they're used to, may feel empowered to go off and do their own thing and have more flexibility around that, have more autonomy. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to be seeing more of that.
That's a really interesting take, Leanne. And just on the subject of junior lawyers and, I suppose, challenges, there seems to have been a sort of a widening gap between partners and associates due to the pandemic. And how would you advise associates on how best to navigate those challenges, especially in environments where there isn't legal project management that can help?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been challenging, and certainly anecdotally, I understand that different firms have dealt with it with varying degrees of success. I mean, I think some firms, unfortunately, have just not dealt with it at all, which has meant that, you know, you hear pretty sad stories of associates having just been left for the past year with not much communication, other than over email and so on. I mean, we have spent a huge amount of time as a management team, a partner group, and actually, you know, the senior associates and counsel in the team, trying to make sure that we've been checking in with everybody in the team. Everybody has had their own challenges. You know, we've got, you know, everybody's heard them all ad nauseum by now, you know, but the junior lawyers working either on their own in flats who've been very isolated, or perhaps even worse, with flatmates who they maybe don't even know very well, all trying to work from one kitchen table. Then you've got people like me who've been homeschooling, and there's just been no balance at all because you've either been working or you've been doing family stuff, and there's just been no breathing space whatsoever. And different people have had different challenges. We have a very international group of lawyers working with us. Lots of people have felt very cut off from family, not being able to travel to be able to see them. And I suppose, you know, to answer your question as to what I would advise junior lawyers is, it is really to try to be open to communication. I mean, one of the things I've found challenging as a manager has been, you know, having calls and nobody wanting to turn their cameras on. It's quite difficult to try to communicate in a human way with, you know, a kind of wall of blank screens. I think it's probably an interesting time for associates to be thinking about their values, and in fact, has their firm treated them the way that they would like to be treated over the past 15 months? Because I think, you know, the market in many ways is opening up because of the way that we're working. We've certainly seen applications for associates coming in from parts of the country other than London. And I think, you know, as things begin to get to go back to normal, I think we will see associates voting with their feet and saying, actually, you know, I don't like how this has been managed. I don't like how I was treated, how I was valued. And we'll see people moving and looking to move to firms that have dealt with these types of things much better. And I think it just goes to show from the firm management perspective how important it is to treat your employees well, to value them, to treat them as human beings, not just as numbers, to be... To know them, to know the team, to make sure the partners know the team, to make sure the management team know the team. Maybe there's, you know, being in a slightly smaller firm as I am, maybe we have more ability to do that in a meaningful way. But even in bigger firms, you can do that at the practice level. There's always a way that it can be diced and sliced so that people are checking in with people. And I think that human element is so important now.
Absolutely. I think more so now than ever, but that's look, that's great advice for any law firm to take on board. Just shifting slightly, I mean, most lawyers really try to be part of the establishment, mm-hmm. to fit in. Do you feel you've taken an alternative path?
That's an interesting question. I presume you're asking me because you think perhaps I haven't. But
I couldn't possibly say.
I suppose if I go back to where we started and look at what I sought to do when I decided I wanted to join an international law firm in London, I went to my careers service at Aberdeen University and panicked because they didn't have any experience of helping students from the university go and work at Magic Circle firms down in London. And of course, in those days, things weren't online. Things weren't online. You had to write off letters and get prospectuses sent to you and so on. And these prospectuses all started arriving through the post. And I had a big pile of them next to the sofa in my flat. And I remember looking at them and panicking and thinking, oh God, I didn't know about any of this. I don't have any lawyers in my family. I didn't ever have anybody to guide me, anybody to tell me what to do. And I was reading about all of these people who were the trainees and associates in these firms. And I was thinking, goodness, like maybe I should have gone to Oxbridge. I should have climbed Everest in my summer holidays. I haven't been doing these things. You know, I've been like working in my dad's warehouse. So I think at that point I realised that perhaps there was a world beyond the world that I was used to living in that I wasn't part of and I hadn't been part of. But I persisted because I had decided that was what I wanted to do, and I ended up taking a training contract with Clifford Chance, and I loved my 4 years at Clifford Chance. I learnt a lot. I worked with some really fantastic lawyers. But I think even from that early stage, I always felt a bit like a fish out of water. And that's because I am quite outspoken. I am quite rebellious. I'm not necessarily patient enough to jump through the hoops that you need to jump through when you're in a big firm like that. And that was why when I was 2 years qualified, I moved to Weil, which had recently set up a kind of a litigation team, which was designed to be what they called at the time a one-stop shop. Most of the other lawyers in the team, in fact, all of them at that point, bar me, were barristers, or they had been barristers by training. And the idea was that, you know, you would provide this full service to clients and perhaps reduce the need to rely on the bar. And when I joined Weil, that really suited me for the next few years of my career because it was a bit more like the Wild West than it had been at Clifford Chance. And I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Of course.
It was a real baptism of fire for me. I got to run things by myself as a junior associate. I got to deal with the clients. I got to instruct the barristers. I didn't have older, more senior people breathing down my neck all the time. I just got to get on with it. And that was a massive learning experience for me, and I learned a lot. But again, I suppose as time progressed and probably you know, a couple of years into the kind of financial crisis, and we were doing a lot of work arising out of the Lehman Brothers insolvency, I just wasn't feeling it anymore. It had given me what I needed in those early days because I was learning so much, but I still wasn't in the right home. And I became a bit disillusioned, and I was kind of like, is this really what I want to do? And actually I ended up jacking it in completely, because I just thought, I don't even know that I want to be a lawyer anymore. I need to take some time off. I need to and I went off and I navel gazed and from Central America for a while, and I did lots of meditation, and funnily enough, and I do believe actually when you give yourself a bit of space and you make bold and brave decisions, that things flow to you, the right things will flow. And that was when the opportunity came to join Housefeld as a partner. And at that point in time, there had been partners previously, but Anthony was the only partner there. He needed somebody who was good, but, you know, was going to be quite cheap and enthusiastic to come in at that stage and just crack on with it. And for me, that was such an exciting opportunity, because it was different, it was creative, it was innovative, it was a bit of a risk. It would have been quite a big risk, probably, had I jumped straight from Wilde to the Housefeld role. But because I'd already said, oh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, I don't know if law's for me, I didn't really have anything to lose. I like being at a firm that kind of... that has challenged the narrative, that has changed the story, that has carved out its own path. I love being part of that. I love that I've been part of that from, you know, not quite the very beginning, but very close to the beginning. It doesn't mean that I don't, you know, that I can't work within the establishment. I can do it, but for me, there's always been that tension, and I think it's interesting, because as I've become more senior, I've become much more comfortable in my own skin in terms of being me, and actually being me in a professional context, because I am very different in a number of ways to, you know, who you might have expected when I was junior to be, you know, your average law firm partner in terms of background, in terms of outlook, in terms of how I present myself and so on. And I think it was difficult for me in the earlier years, being me, not having many other role models like me around, and trying to fit in with that more establishment thing, and it just not feeling quite right. And because I'm somebody who is very much... honesty is very important to me, truth is very important to me, and so living something that's not quite your own truth becomes a bit uncomfortable, and that's why I feel very lucky to be where I am now.
Leanne, I mean, as you know, we end up talking to lots of very confident and successful top of their game lawyers, but we also find that, again, as you just said, actually when you strip it back, there are a lot of doubts and challenges and worries for everybody, and we're all human, right? So this idea that we're made up of all that, we're all made up of the same neuroses and challenges. It's really interesting to hear what you say there, because along the takeaway I'm getting is you just have to be really persistent. You just have to keep kind of fighting your corner to get where you need to get to. But I'm really also interested in where are the challenges along the way? Where are the mistakes you've made along the way, and what did you learn from them? What did you take away?
Mistakes I've made along the way. that's an interesting one. So I think if I go right back to I suppose when I was studying and thinking about what I wanted to do career-wise, I was very naive. I mean, I think I was much more naive than the students that I come across today, just in terms of not really realising that I needed to go and get some relevant work experience and so on. In the end, thankfully it dawned on me just in time, and I ended up basically doing the photocopying at Freshfields in Brussels one summer, which looked okay on my CV. But I think if I go right back to the start, what I really wish that I had sought out at an earlier stage in my career was a mentor, and somebody who I could relate to. So probably a woman, and probably somebody a bit outspoken like me, because I feel that some of the mistakes I made earlier in my career were around not knowing when to dial it down, trying to take on everybody else's issues and go and argue them. Sometimes that would happen and you'd kind of turn around looking for the backup and everyone would say, oh, no, that I don't have a problem with that. And you'd be like, bloody hell, you know. So I think that took me quite a long time in my professional journey to learn that sometimes less is more, that being honest doesn't mean saying every single thing that pops into your mind that might just happen to be your view or true. And I think that that was something that, you know, had I learned sooner, that would have saved me, you know, some level of grief throughout my career. I do also think, though, to be fair to myself, that, you know, it's fair to say, and things may be changing a bit. I really, really, truly hope they are. But, you know, being somebody like I was as a junior lawyer, I was not. There are still lots of men in the legal profession that find it difficult to handle strong, outspoken women. And so I think those two things together were probably not always working together in my favour. So that would be the first lesson that I would go back and teach myself, is knowing when to be quiet, basically. I think the second lesson that I would take from the way in which my career unfolded is that I probably waited too long to make the jump from while, because I think lots of lawyers find themselves in this position is where you're kind of like, you know that what you're doing isn't the right thing for you, but you're a bit paralyzed because you maybe don't appreciate that actually there's so much difference between different firms and the type of work you can be doing. And even more so these days, I think even more so than there was 10 years ago, because you've got all this option of boutiques and so on that didn't really exist when I was at that point. And I think, you know, that was probably a mistake that I made, was to not recognise that it is possible to find your professional home, to find somewhere where you kind of get your flow, where you can be really into what you're doing and where your values really resonate with those of your colleagues, or your colleagues' values really resonate with your values, and that just makes things really great. So I think those would be the things with hindsight, but, you know, some of that comes just with naivety, and sometimes you've got to learn these lessons the hard way, I think.
Absolutely. Well, look, Leanne, it's that was again another fantastic response, and I suspect Jamie and I could speak to you all day, but we're sort of near the end now, unfortunately for us, because as I said, we could speak to you all day. And look, we appreciate your time, and it's we're now sort of down to the sort of final question, which has become very much a part of the makeup of the Score podcast. But if you hadn't become a lawyer, what is the alternative path you would have followed?
Well, when I was very little, I wanted to be a bus conductor very, very badly. But
A bus conductor.
So the person with the little machine that gave the tickets when you got on the bus. I'm really showing my age now. But obviously bus conductors were phased out and I got into LA law, so you know that was off the list. But in all seriousness, if I were not a lawyer, I'm quite a, it's probably not a very fashionable word these days, but I'm quite a hippie at heart. I would probably be some kind of alternative practitioner or meditation teacher. I don't think it would be anything at all to do with business. It might be to do with relationships and people, but on the more esoteric side of things.
Fantastic. Well, listen, that sounds like probably another podcast, I suspect.
On the bus, we might have to explain what on the buses and LA law were to the generations afterwards. But we get it. We understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'm a 70s kid. I get it.
Well, Leanne, that's been tremendous. Thanks again, echoing Paul's thoughts. Tremendous that you joined us, and thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's been fun.
As ever, you can find us at www.overture.london. And we look forward to welcoming you to the next score next time. Thanks again. Take care.